Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Elizabeth, and I am definitely an alcoholic.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hello. For those who care to join us, let us open the menu with the serenity prayer. God,
grant us the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen.
The Simple Actors Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room in the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a tall flight of stairs. No, they're not. at this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of the alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, share their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 4, made a searching and fearless more inventory of ourselves. Please welcome our panel this evening, David and Amy. I will now read the first paragraph on page 67, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 67. Notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It was an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
All right. Happy Christmas Eve, everyone. I'm David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, David.
Thank you for having me here tonight. I'm just going to tell you that my home group is Larchmont Big Book Study at 8 p.m. on Mondays. And my sobriety date is the 16th of November, 2013. Fear, this short word, somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. Notice how it's bracketed with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, the employer, and the wife. And, you know, it talks about, wasn't it myself that put the ball in motion? You know, in my drinking days, I made decisions in my life, fancied or real, as the book said, a lot of times fancied, based on things I made up to myself about what I thought was going on in the world. I had anger, resentments, anxieties, all based on things I was telling myself that may or may not have been true. And, you know, when I say those words, as opposed to fear, I never understood that I was a fearful person. That was something you guys taught me about myself. See, when I felt fear, I turned that into another emotion like anger or resentment, and I hid that from myself. I would not tell you that I'm afraid. And it was, I found through writing this stuff down in the four step and then getting into five, which is obviously not what we're here to talk about tonight, but I found that portion of fear that had been looming under the surface. And it talks about it stealing time. It being classed with stealing. I wrote down here in my book, stealing time. I can't tell you guys, you know, just sitting by myself a lot of times on my front steps, Greyhound next to me or in my shop, listening to Angry Man Talk Radio, talking about the world's coming to an end, drinking by myself, just thinking about the way I felt about people and the world around me and just, you know, reeling in it. And it stole my time. It stole a lot of time. Time that I also would have grandiose delusions about all the wonderful things I was going to do, but there I was, just sitting there with me, myself, and my fears. So that's enough out of me. Pass.
Okay. Thanks, David. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Hey.
This group, Simple Actions, is my home group, and my sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. I concur. What I like to show the world is my anger because that makes me feel strong and powerful. But what is absolutely underneath all of my anger is the self-centered fear. And when I break down my fears, what always turns up is I'm not good enough. And what turns up is that I live a self-reliant life. And what I know absolutely to my core is self-reliance always fails. That doesn't stop me from continuing to strike out. You know, the messages from the world are so strong. If it is to be, it is up to me. Make it happen. Set a goal. Manifest. Whatever. But that doesn't work out for me. In fact, I was made not to be able to reach a goal or do anything without the God of my understanding. I did never want to admit that I had fears either. It just feels so weak and pathetic. And I just, my imagination resists me as weak or pathetic. But the very first thing that I do when I get into Alcoholics Anonymous is admit that I'm powerless. And if I'm powerless, and my life is unmanageable when I'm drinking because of alcohol, but that's kind of done pretty quickly. And so my life continues to be unmanageable because I'm trying to manage it. And when I'm self-reliant, I think that I'm large and in charge. Mm-hmm. Iran talked about calling himself Iran the Almighty. I really do talk about myself to myself as Amy the Magnificent. I do. I really do. I do. I even visualize a little crown on my head a lot of the time. I do. It's real. But that self-reliant attitude is absolutely belied by my life's experience, because my experience is that my self-will can get me but so far. My reason, my logic, my big brain can get me but so far, but it doesn't get me the whole way. I always fall short. And I fall short a lot of the time because I'm relying on human power. ABCs have told me no human power can relieve not just the alcohol thing, but the ism thing, my chronic self-centeredness, my chronic self-absorption, my chronic belief that if I tend the boundaries of self, if I make sure you don't harm me, if I make sure that I take care of me, it's logical that then my life will be happy, joyous, and free. Except that's absolutely not true. It makes me miserable. Thinking about me makes me so unhappy. Wondering whether you're poaching on my boundaries makes me so unhappy. And then I get dishonest. You do something that makes me angry, and I start talking to myself because I don't want to admit that I'm afraid that I'm not good enough. So I start talking to myself as, you know, that jackass. What? Why would they do that? They know that I'm the most honest person alive. Oh, shit. I mean, I blow it up to give myself a leg to stand on, but anyone who knows me knows I lie like a rug. I walked around the first year that I was gainfully employed with and people in this room know this, with stacks of $100 bills, because I never went to the bank, I always used the petty cash. At one point, I was like over $3,000 out of the petty cash. Used it all the time. And I was talking about it in front of some of my fellows in this room, and really it didn't even occur to me that I was dishonest until I was talking about it out loud, and I started to feel that feeling that I'm a freaking thief. I'm a thief. I'm a sober worse thief. Great. So fear is in all of this. I don't know how to take care of myself, but I think I should be able to take care of myself. I don't know how to get along with you, but I think that I should be able to get along with you. And I don't want to talk about these things because it reveals stuff about me that I don't really want you to know. So when I do my four step and I do those four columns, and I'm angry at my mother because she doesn't treat me the way I think that I should be treated. The fear under that is, I don't think I should be treated any better. I'm a piece of shit for a daughter. And when I take all those fears, my boss doesn't pay me enough, I'm mad at him. What's the fear? I probably don't deserve to make any more money. I'm not that great of an employee. Mm-hmm. So when I take all those things and I line them up in my fear inventory and I start breaking them down and I start seeing the repetition, it all ends up as not good enough, not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. And I think that it's your job to make me feel good about myself, and you're failing because you can't blow enough smoke up my butt. You can't tell me you love me and I'm magnificent enough times to overcome the black hole that's inside of me. It's a job that only God can handle. Fear touches every single thing. I am afraid. I'm afraid of having friends because you'll talk to me too much, and you know I'm thinking I don't want people talking to me all the time. But then I'm afraid not to have friends because it's proof to the world and to me that I'm a loser. I'm afraid of going to the mailbox because there could be bills in there that I can't pay. But I'm afraid not to go to the mailbox because my mailman will leave a note on my door saying, you need to get the mail out of here. I can't fit anything else in there. And then I'll feel like a loser. It's actually happened on multiple occasions. So all this fear, it touches everything. And it is the crux of my spiritual problem that I think that I should be more than I am. And the truth is, I don't even know what I am. God made me. I'm a child of God. I still, this far into recovery, or this not far into recovery, relatively speaking, I still can't tell you who I am and who God is. I know a lot about who I am not. And I know a lot about who God is not. But that fear is always kicked up inside of me when I compare myself with other people, when I compare myself with movies, when I imagine what normal life is, because I haven't had a normal life. My childhood was miserable because I was sure that what was going down in every other household in the world looked like what I saw in the Brady Bunch. And that was not going on in my household. So I had a resentment that my family was screwed up, but I also had a fear that I'm broken. How could I be in a family that was any nicer? The Brady Bunch would institutionalize me. They wouldn't have me. So that fear touches everything. And from that position where I'm not good enough and I'm less than, what's going on all the time is this hyperbole, you know? Well, I'm the smartest person in the room. Everybody should like me. But then I've jacked that up to such a proportion that the thing that I'm doing, because I think maybe it'll attract you to me, it repels you to me. I'm a loudmouth know-it-all. Who wants to be friends with a loudmouth know-it-all? So my strategies are all flawed, they're all failed, they're all based on self, and they are not going to get me what I want. I cannot overcome my fear. I'm powerless over my fear. I can't outrun my ego. My ego, which is what I show you all, and my self-esteem, which is the thing that's inside that doesn't really exist a whole lot. So I've got this projection, this pretense, and I'm walking around afraid all the time that you're going to get behind the screen. You know, you're going to find out that the Wizard of Oz is whatever. I don't even know what the Wizard of Oz is. That's how much of a non-entity is that I can't even bring it to my mind right now. What in the fuck was the Wizard of Oz? But anyway, you'll find out there's nothing behind the curtain. And the only solution for that is God. Yet I still get into fear, and I still have to inventory my fear, and I still have to keep breaking it down. And what I come to is, I'm not good enough, I have no friends, I'm out on the edge of the universe, there's no one for me. And if I'm out on the edge of the universe and there's no one for me, I'm basically saying I don't believe in God, because God's not there either. Mm. I'm out in a black hole. And without God, I am truly 100% screwed. And I do not have a reliable way of getting to God unless I continue doing this work with you people doing it with me. That is deflation of ego. I just have a rapidly rebuilding one. So I need to be in this continuously. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
We now continue on page 68. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so. But we are not on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role he assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think he would have us and humbly rely on him, does he enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality the way of weakness. Paradoxically, I'm sorry, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear.
All right. Yeah, still David, still alcoholic.
David.
So... my first experience with a spiritual solution started with a greeter at my very first AA meeting. And there again, walking into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was unaware that I was a fearful person. I thought I was an angry person. I thought I was a little maladjusted, probably drank a little too much, but I had no idea I was afraid. And one of my first what I call my first spiritual experience started with a greeter at an AA meeting who saw me looking at the ground. So fear, I didn't want to look anyone in the eyes. You know, I didn't want you guys to see me, see how I felt. And he gave me a hug and he told me, "Hey there," all nice and chipper. And he pulled me in and gave me that hug. He said, "Hey man, you don't have to feel that way anymore. And you don't have to be alone anymore." And I, you know, it gave me the heebie-jeebies right off the bat for someone to treat me that way and be so sure that he knew what I was going through when he had never seen me. See, I was taught a long time ago the particulars are not always important. The solution is the same for all of us. And that man saw a bullseye on me and said, "I got a solution for you, brother." You know, that didn't amount to much that night. But 3 years later, when I was in my kitchen at 12 p.m. in a bathrobe, supposed to be at work, no way to pay the bills, crying to God that if you're real, show yourself. I hadn't thought about that guy in forever, and his voice popped in my head. And that was that spiritual feeling that overtook me. And for that 24 hours, it took fear away from me. It got me to call another alcoholic to say, "I don't know what you guys have, but please help me." And for the umpteenth time that I asked, the umpteenth time you returned the favor to say, "We will. Come on. Show up. Here we go." And, you know, I thought asking for help was a weakness. I was afraid to ask for help. I was afraid of a lot of things, as Amy pointed out, but I was certainly afraid to not be able to come to my own solution on my own terms, because that means I would have to get outside of myself and be part of something larger than me. And that was nerve-wracking to me. I didn't know how to do it. And I'll tell you, you guys taught me that taking a few simple actions on a daily basis would allow me to be reasonably happy most of the time. And I have found that to be true for myself. What also comes with that as an added benefit is the voices in my head seem to slightly disappear. They quiet down just a little bit, one day at a time. You know, I talked about a sobriety date. All I got is today, because if I walk out this door and walk away from these rooms, Alcoholics Anonymous, stop helping newcomers, stop calling you guys, The simple actions, the fear comes back. The raging turbine of David and I, every sentence starting with I comes back, you know? And how am I going to handle all this? You know, it was suggested to me that these fears, these insecurities, All this stuff I'm putting down in a fourth step to try to clean that junk drawer in the kitchen, if you will. I don't have to do that alone, just like that guy said so long ago. You know, you don't have to carry this load alone if you don't want to. You got a whole bunch of old ideas that brought you into this place. You don't even have to get rid of those. Just set them down for a second. Just set them right next to you, you know, cart them around. And if you want to pick them back up and go drink, psh. But in the meantime, if maybe you just try this for a little bit, see what happens, see what materializes, you know. I don't apologize today for a higher power. I thought it was weakness, but I do see it as the way of strength. You guys are my strength. You guys have led me to a higher power. I thought the goal here when I did the steps at the beginning was is I was going to get my old life back and everything was going to be okay. That's what I thought we were aiming for here. But what I found out is that I get this whole new life, this beautiful, wonderful life. I mean, I really mean it. I don't know why we all get to be here tonight. I have no idea why we're nice and warm and cozy and amongst each other. And there's right behind here, I don't know if you saw what's going on right behind here right now, but there's some guys looking in some bushes for some cigarettes. And God doesn't love the newcomer any more than he loves me, just so you know. So for the grace of God, there go I. And we let him demonstrate through us what he can do. I have found that, you know, today being very valuable in some 12-step work. You know, that ego thing that is constantly driving me to, I'm not here to save anybody. Let me just say that. You know, I'm not. My best shot at success and staying sober today is being humbly teachable and really just trying to be a vessel for AA. These things, because it says here in the last sentence, commence to outgrow fear. When I direct my attention to someone else besides myself, all my problems seem to be solved. All my troubles seem to disappear for a 24-hour period. And it has helped me commence to outgrow fear. You know, these words materialize the longer I stay here. But it takes work. You know, it takes action, simple actions. Not easy, but simple. And one day at a time, I found I'm reasonably happy. And those fear things, man, I'm just going to pass. Thanks.
The most important part of that reading for me is playing the role that God assigns me. Because how I play God is assigning roles to you and to myself. And the roles that I'm assigning to you are basically you adore me, you make me feel good about me. I mean, there are others. There, you know, the other things like you're 10 years sober, your life should look this way. You are the owner of a business, you should conduct yourself this way. You are a father, you should conduct yourself this way. So I'm assigning roles to you, and another big disappointment, because that doesn't work out, you're failing. And I assign roles to myself. I assign these roles to myself, and the roles that I assign to me are kind of these caricatures. They're the armature that I prop my ego on. And one of my roles is the smartest kid in the classroom. Another one of the roles that I have played is the slut. Another role that I have played is the child of wealth and privilege. There are lots of these caricatures that I play. And the thing about defaulting into these roles that I have assigned myself is, you know, I know how to dress. I know what to talk about. Like when I'm the slut, I tell dirty jokes. I wear cheap clothes or tight stuff, you know, whatever. Hang around with whatever. You know what I'm talking about. You know, I find myself at places like the Cherry Motel or whatever. When I'm the smartest kid in the classroom, every word is polysyllabic. You won't know a single thing that comes out of my mouth because I'm so busy proving to you that I'm worth something. I mean, really, I'm trying to prove it to myself. But all of these roles are not who I am. And the opposite effect is what occurs. It doesn't make me feel good about myself. It makes me feel worse about myself because it makes, rather than feeling superior to you, I feel different from you. I feel detached from you. I don't feel like I'm rubbing shoulders with everyone else. I had a therapist one time who was so fed up with my superiority, because of course she didn't know what she was talking about either. And I was going to have to fix her. She had me conduct our sessions standing on an ottoman in the room. I stood on an ottoman and looked down at her sitting at her desk and talked to her. And the point was taken, which does not mean that I don't lord it about nowadays, but I got it. I got it that when I am playing a role, when I am telling myself who I am, it is a way to be distant because I am afraid. I am afraid that I am not like the rest of you. I am afraid that if I get in amongst you and rub shoulders with you and show you all the broken bits and all of the black thoughts, that you will run screaming from the room. And it's never happened. I have a long history of fifth steps. No one has ever left the room screaming. No one has ever thought they needed to call the cops. And that's another aspect of it, is that either I'm the best person in the world or I am such a black-hearted criminal that a sponsor is going to run screaming from the room. And all of these characterizations are just not real. There's that great story, The Velveteen Rabbit. And I think about it at Christmas time. I don't know if it has anything to do with Christmas. I might have gotten it for Christmas one year. I don't really know. It doesn't matter. Got off track. David's flashing lights are kind of making me a little epileptic. But anyway. The Velveteen Rabbit, you know, does everybody know the story? The Velveteen Rabbit is the favorite of the little boy, and the little boy gets scarlet fever or chicken pox or something hideous, and they're going to throw the Velveteen Rabbit away. He's on the trash heap, and his fur is rubbed off, and he's missing an eye, and blah, 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 blah. And I don't really know the whole right story, but the gist of it is that another one of the animals from the nursery says, this is what happens when you become real. You're about to become real. And so getting real means that I'm going to let you see me missing an eye with shabby fur. Maybe I don't smell so good. I'm not perfect. And I'm so afraid of that because I believe that you want me to be perfect, that that's how you can love me. Every time that I speak and I really just unburden myself, I'm absolutely sure when I walk away from a table or a podium that that's it. No one's ever going to speak to me again, because now I've talked about blowjobs. I've talked about thievery. I've talked about, you know, I wish my mom were dead. It's going to be bad. I'm finally going to be the pariah I have always been on the inside of my brain. And it never happens. It never happens. When I let go of my fear, when I let go of my ego posturing, when I become real, when I become or allow myself to become who God made me to be, instead of the perfect picture that I can show people on a page, I get loved. And so my fear that I won't fit in is just another way that I separate myself from God's love, from your love, and from my love of myself. When I can accept that I am the most special person in the world and I am not special at all simultaneously, when I can accept that just like everyone else, there are a lot of things that I'm great at, there's a whole bunch of stuff that I'm pretty average at, and there's some stuff that I'm not good at all. I'm just like you. And in that place, I can look you in the eye and I can be of service to you. I cannot be of service to you or do God's work for me if I'm standing up on an ottoman, because you're not going to want to listen to me. And I get tired, and it's an unstable place, unstable position to hold. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
Thank you. We still continue on page 68. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes perhaps. One set of voices cried that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on a straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the
arbiter
of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them?
All right, David Alcoholic. So molding my sex ideal is really what this kind of talks to me about in my experience. You know, this is where my chameleon attitude shows up when the hormones overtake the brain cells. And, you know, I've been a lot of different people, like Amy has said. I've been whatever it takes just to fit in and not show you who I am. And when it came to women, I would be anyone possible that it took to possibly get from something from you, if you will, to try to put it politely. But, you know, with this sex thing, we enjoy sex, right? I'm not here about good, bad, what's right and wrong. I'm not here to judge it, just like the book says. I didn't get sober and become God's little sunbeam. That's not what I did. But I do have a sexual ideal that I tried to live with today. But when I was drinking, it was take all that you can. And, you know, it wasn't so much about so here's like the weird thing to me, and maybe you can relate or maybe you can't, but the sex feels great, but what feels even greater is what comes next. What I'm really searching for is what comes after the sex, which is this ego building, I'm the man, you know, the dirtier, the wronger, the more I shouldn't have it, the more I want it, you know? And alcohol allows me to behave that way. And, you know, sex problems, yes. When I got sober, I thought maybe I was doing it wrong. It wasn't this knuckle drag fist fight that it used to be. And, you know, am I being too soft? Am I being a weakling? Don't I need to show more ego? Don't I need to be more, you know, I was very confused about it. What happened to me in my drinking days with sex is that I did things that made me not be able to trust other people. I would burn relationships down based on my own behavior because I just knew if I loved you beyond this physical contact that some other David Jeffrey's going to do to you what I've been doing to people my whole damn life. Just using, taking, abusing, don't know your first name, don't know your last name, don't give a shit, not calling you tomorrow attitude. Pardon my language. And, you know, the benefit here for me doing Alcoholics Anonymous with this type of head game going on with me is that I sit down and I write this stuff out and I share this with another human being in step five, and I realize I'm not this ugly, demonstrous human being that I think I am. I realize that I'm just like a lot of other people, you know? My instincts are run riot. You know, I might be a little unchecked, but I'm no different than my fellow man in many cases. You know, that gives me peace of mind. That gives me a starting point. Okay, I'm not as broken as I thought I was. My fear that I'm unsavable is not true. My fear that I can't actually be loved beyond the physical aspect, that's not true. You know, you guys give me a nice clean slate to work with. You say, David, just you've shared it, you've done it. That's wreckage of the past. How about a solution that allows you not to make any wreckage of the present? How about a solution that allows you to go forth in life and hold up that ideal as best you can? You might have some bumps in the road. You know, I found when I work a spiritual program to the best of my abilities that the behavior of that guy doesn't work. I tried it early on in sobriety. They do not walk beside themselves. That's not my experience. Maybe you guys will be able to do that, but I can't be a slut, for lack of better terms, and be sober. They don't walk together. That's not my ideal. So sex starts with learning how to love myself first. You guys taught me how to love myself. That opens up for healthy relationships, in my opinion, good relationships. And through that, I'm starting to understand what an ideal of love looks like, you know, beyond the physical, beyond the nameless faces. And I don't have to get drunk to do it. I'm kind of just rambling here, but I'll say a few other things and I'll pass to Amy. But, you know, I used to think I had to be drunk to have sex. You know, who wants a Minute Man? If I get drunk, I can go for hours. You know, I got to really please them. And, it's all just nonsense, man. I am such a nonsense bag in the head. I mean, I am just a self-deluded, self-seeking, selfish individual who's always on the take, man. And I'll be honest with you. If you've never done step four, do it. Show that courage that it takes to write this stuff down and even a little more courage and get into action in step five. Because cleaning my clock, getting this stuff out in the open, one of the best decisions I ever made. Now I walk with society instead of alone. You know, that's been my experience with this. I'm going to pass.
Today I see my past sex conduct just as another extension of my self-seeking behaviors. I'm in relationships with other people so they can tell me that I'm okay. And sex is the ultimate affirmation. It signals to me and to the world that I'm desirable, I'm powerful, I have something that somebody else wants. My promiscuity followed me into sobriety, and I had rules that were just so screwed up that exemplify spiritual malady. I mean, one of my rules was, I'm not married, therefore I can sleep with anybody and it's not adultery. If they're married, that's their problem. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not committing adultery. Another rule was, if it was just one person a day, it wasn't that big of a deal. But there were a lot of days when I was looking at the clock waiting for it to be 12:01. That's the kind of stuff. And that's the kind of alcoholic I am. I've looked at a gajillion bowls of ice cream and thought, that's a reasonable breakfast because that's a dairy product. I mean, I know how to talk to me. So I used recreational sex while I was sober, basically the same way that I use drugs and alcohol, basically the same way that I use flour and sugar. I used it to escape from what it felt like to be me on the inside, to make the world go away by crawling into bed with someone, and not like in a romantic, oh, make the world go away, but like the sicker and the nastier and the crazier made me feel, you know, more like a badass, more like a tough chick. And also I'm sure there was an underlying element of, I deserve to be punished, you know, go ahead and pull out a leather strap. But mainly thinking I'm a badass because I get myself up to this crazy stuff. I actually went to another fellowship and worked through the steps. And there are other places for that. And what I discovered is basically what I said. This is another expression of my self-seeking behavior, of using other people to meet my needs and not really caring what happens to them, because I never did. I couldn't have cared less how it felt to be them. I mean, I don't even know names. Like, I mean, just icky. But I got in a relationship when I was 8 years sober with a man who would not sleep with me on the first date. It was my first. I've never been on a date without having sex on the first date. Because another one of my rules was, why am I going to bother getting to know you and going through all that awkward phase if you're no good in bed? There's no reason for me to even pursue this. That was another one of my rules that made a lot of sense to me. But this guy would not sleep with me on the first date. And it took a month. And I mean, I was like, what the hell? And finally, I just took my clothes off and said, let's go. It's way too much talking for me. Way too much talking. And I spent 15 years with him. And he was a normal guy. He was a normal guy, and he wanted to express his love for me at certain times, or he would actually say, I can't fall asleep. You know, do you feel like doing this, or I can just get a sock and deal with it myself. I mean, he was so normal. Who even knows that there are people that are that good and that are that normal? He didn't want to use me. He'd actually ask me, basically, can I, you know, whatever, I got to fall asleep. But then he got really, really sick. and we could not have sex. And I was afraid I would kill him. His heart was really weak. And anyway, and so I spent years naked, physically and emotionally, with this man. And I got to see him in very bad conditions. And we were running out of money. And because we were taking care of him with a failing heart. And I certainly did not think that I was unselfish enough to be able to stick with somebody when, you know, he couldn't pay for a housekeeper or a new car or whatever. But it turns out that I did really love him. And in the absence of sex, we developed the most intimate relationship that I've ever had in my entire life. He knew everything about me. And there would have been a time, even in recovery, that I would have thought, that's way too much exposure, way too much. I don't want anyone up in my head like that. I mean, I'm the kind of person that you could be talking to me and I would say, I'm thinking, stop talking to me. I got something going on here. You know, and my thoughts are much more important to me than yours will ever be. And he saw all of me. And I realized that sex was just the kind of next logical step. It's really the least intimate thing that's on the menu. There's so much more that's so much more intimate and so much deeper. And that's just kind of a, you know, whatever. And I mean, I've heard other people in AA talk this way, and at the time I was younger and I thought, her hormones are gone, she doesn't know what she's talking about. And I'm 51 years old, and you may think that privately, don't tell me, you may think that about me. But I had the juiciest, most intimate communion that I've ever had with another human being. Going years without physical congress. And so the sex ideal that came about after the first time I did a sex inventory, which was pretty much stuff like be a giver, don't be a taker, play the role that God has assigned you, see men as people before you see them as, you know, a wallet or a dick, because, you know, what else are you? That stuff became real. Not because I was capable of saying, here's what I'm going to do, I'm going to be a good girl from now on. No, because I was absolutely incapable of doing that. And I just allowed myself, I just allowed God to have his way with me in the process. That's pretty much, I'm just jawing on and on about how much I know, but really what I know is that when I show up and just let God have his way with me, it really works out beautifully. It does. That's all.
Thank you, Amy. Thank you for sharing.
We now continue on page 69. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. Where have we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom have we hurt? Do we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Or were we... I apologize. Where... were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. In this way, we try to shape a sane and sound ideal for our future sex life. We subjected each relation to this test. Was it selfish or not? We asked God to mold our ideals and help us to live up to them. We remembered always that our sex powers were God-given and therefore good, neither to be used lightly or selfishly, nor to be despised or loathed.
Okay, David Alcoholic. So yeah, my sex ideal. So I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of being there at step four. I felt humiliated. I felt ashamed. Even more so when I had a daughter, you know, the way that I used to think I was the cool guy, you know, this is awesome. You know, I'm just one of the guys. And it's like Amy said, basically nameless faces. People, sacks of meat, you know, really just not taking into consideration how someone else might feel, think. You know, some people in my experience, even really cared for me, liked me, you know, thought highly of me, and I treated them poorly as well. I used them as objects. And that paragraph, were we these things? Yes, to all of it. I saw selfishness, dishonesty. When I'd try to have a relationship, I talked about it. I'd have jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. Not because anyone else was doing anything to me, but because I manifested a world that I lived in. And the world that I lived in was David Jeffries is not trustworthy. Therefore, no one else is trustworthy. How in the hell can I trust you? If I'm capable of it, surely you are too. You know, and I would have arguments and retaliate against my significant others based on stuff that I made up. You know, oh, who's that text message? I know exactly what's happening right now. Oh, you're going to hear the end of this, and I'm going to yell at you, and I'm going to scream at you. Oh, and I'm waiting for the reaction that I want. I want you to give me that reaction. I love you so much, David. Just tell me I love you so much. You know, I'm yanging, and I want you to reinforce me. Oh, well, you haven't given it to me? Well, maybe I'll up it to punching a hole in the door that I got to now patch, you know? My behavior and my jealousies and my resentments were off the charts because I was such an insecure, going back to the couple paragraphs before, fearful individual, you know, who could drink all that away in a heartbeat. I could drink it all away in a heartbeat. I could do drugs too. I could do a lot of drugs too. And, you know, that's all well and good till, as maybe some of you have come to find out for yourselves, that you can do it all the drink and all the drugs you want, and your voice in the head is still there, you know. My sexual idea, it's something, you know, Amy said something that the relationship I'm in today, I tried to go in for a kiss on the first date and I did not get a kiss on the first date. And that threw me for a loop because I was not used to that. I was thrown off by the fact that someone in my life had self-respect for themselves, because the people I was running around with, these floozies, they did not have self-respect and neither did I. So I was like, okay, I don't know how to handle this, you know? That was actually a conversation for my sponsor. I met someone who won't kiss me. Like, what do you do? How do you treat someone well? I had to ask them. I don't want to mess this up. Please help me. You know, walk me through this, you know? But, you know, my sexual idea is I really enjoy loving someone. I really enjoy loving someone. I love that I can love myself a little bit today. You know, these are not things I had when I came into this program. It's almost 7 o'clock. I was listening to the bells ring there. I did not go make any amends to these people that I had hurt. I did not go out and tell the world all the wrongs that I had committed. What I did here is I wrote it down and I shared it with my sponsor, and we said, again, let's not make any more wreckage of the present. Now, let's not keep repeating this behavior. You do these simple actions. I'm going to keep telling you guys some of the same stuff because it's what works for me. You keep doing these simple actions. You keep doing these things. You keep showing up for AA, and you don't have to repeat this behavior. I don't want to – it talks about here it can get a little complicated and off track. I do want to tell you that there's a solution in all this. I don't have to be that way. I don't have to be this selfish. I don't have to be this self-seeking, and I don't have to go out and use people. I can have another way of living. I'll just pass at that. So,
The first time that I did a fourth and fifth step directly out of the big book, I misunderstood what my sponsor said to me. And when I went through my sexual history to answer these questions, I thought she said every significant male-female relationship. And I started with my father and my brothers. And I saw, and then the first was a little boy I had a crush on in the first grade. And really, I didn't have a crush on him. I missed when they explained how to tie your shoelaces. And to this day, I still do rabbit ears and then do them around. I don't know how to do that other thing. But this little boy would tie my shoes for me every day. And he was my first crush in kindergarten. But what I saw between my father, my brothers, and the little boy who tied my shoes was that this started from the get-go. And I can't say where it came from, maybe TV, maybe my mom, maybe, I don't know where. But I saw men as other, not really emotionally viable. You know, if I want to have a conversation, I'll call up one of my girlfriends. I'm not going to talk to a man. And what I saw the men in my life were, you know, you do like mow the lawn, you work on the car, you show, you know, you're an ATM, you're a dick, you know, whatever. Those are the things, what I can get from you, what you can deliver. And it started from childhood. And the most important part of getting a sex ideal for me was that part, what should I have done instead? And, you know, my sponsor said the answer to this is not done what I did. That's not the right answer. The right answer is, look, I treat men as people, not as penises, people. I consider other people's feelings. And that's in my nightly review. You know, was I thinking of myself or was I looking to see what I could put into the stream of life? And that doesn't delineate, did I do that for females only or did I do that for males as well? I need to treat people as people, not be a user. And I have been a user. I am a heat-seeking missile for approval and affirmation. And sex is a really easy, you know, bang for your buck. There it is. I get to feel good about me, and I get to prove to the rest of you that I'm viable. And it's using, and it's, I mean, I don't know if it's, I've got too much old time religion in my past, but it, you know, we fit together a certain way. But it's not the beginning of intimacy. It's the thing that comes after intimacy. I can remember in Sunday school being told that your body is writing a check that your heart cannot cash. And although I'm really not given to quoting religious stuff, I think that's irritating in other people. I don't know why I'm allowing myself to do it. There's something real. You know, in fact, all of those things that I heard way back then, like my mother going on about nobody will buy the cow if you give away the milk for free. And I'm not up here advocating for no premarital sex, but it is a part of my sex ideal, not to have sex outside of a committed relationship. It's just using. And I'm a user. Not only do I use people, but I've used drugs, I've used alcohol, I've used whatever I can get my hands on to avoid me, to avoid my life. I was talking to somebody right before the meeting started who was saying that there was no chaos around him, and he thought that his higher power is probably directing him to start some self-care. And I was like, yeah, I know so little about self-care. It's like bubble bath and Chinese buffet. That's what I know how to chill out. That's it. And that's very sad. That is quite sad. But I put that together with this because the way that I used to know how to chill out or how to relax was to have some good thumping sex. You know, that would be the only reason that I would want to work up a sweat ever is for having sex. And I mean, even then, there's got to be a fan on. You know, it's got to be extreme climate control. And so what is coming to me in this little conversation is that I'm working these steps to clear away the things that block me from God. And the things that block me from God are my resentments and my fears, because I'm playing God. My resentments because I'm imposing a role on you and you're not satisfying me. My fear because I've imposed a role on me and I'm not satisfying me. This stuff is blocking me from God. I cannot play God and surrender to a God. And I'm doing it again in the sex relation, being self-seeking, trying to get you to tell me who I am and what I'm worth. And none of these things are ever going to work out. I mean, as an addict, if it's not working out, what I think is, we'll try a little harder, do it a little faster, throw some more on it. And that's not going to work either. And so I'm cycling through these steps to clear away the stuff that blocks me from God. And it's a frightening process because it means, if I'm thinking about it, which I'm thinking way too much, but it means I am willing to become a stranger to myself. I didn't get here so you could tell me how I could get away with drinking, or how I could get away with recreational sex, or how I could get away with stealing from the petty cash and still be able to sleep at night and not have to get loaded to deal with myself. I came here because everything needed to change. And it's scary to move forward into, I don't know what's next. I don't know who I'll be. And I don't do it out of virtue. I just do it because, you know, there's a fire burning behind me. There's nowhere else to go. Just jump out of the window. And so all of this change also includes sex. It also includes how I relate to other people, how I respect other people, how I respect myself. In the full bore of my sexual acting out, I would have told you that I felt extremely powerful. Which, I mean, what a pile of crap. Because number one, if your standards are low enough, you can get laid every day of the week. And number two, I thought that I was using them, but what I was really doing was allowing them to use me. And so all of my human power, my sex power, my brain power, the power of other people, no human power can relieve me, only a power greater than myself. And so I have to get through this part of it to get to that power. I'm never going to get the power. I'm not doing this so that I can have the power to then manage my life or make myself not drink or screw around anymore. I'm doing this to get to the power. And even then, I don't get to tell the power what to do with me. I don't get to go to God with a wish list. You know, make me this, make me that, make me this. But I mean, my life proves I don't know what I should be doing anyway. So there's a whole lot of walking into darkness. And thank God that we're just all kind of shuffling forward into the darkness, believing that there's a light and doing it together. Thanks.
Thanks for sharing.
That's all we have time for this sharing portion. So let's thank David Amy. We now have the seventh tradition basket. Thank you. Read the self-support green card. Why did I say that low? Sorry. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Does anybody have any AA-related announcements?
Hi, Irene. My home group, A11 Sunday, 11 o'clock, January 6th of 2019. We'll be having our anniversary. 10 o'clock will be food, and 11 o'clock, Miles Methodist, will be sharing your experience with them.
Thanks for sharing.
Alcoholic David.
David.
Merry Christmas, everybody. When we break up the meeting, the chairs are going to go stack in the back of the room, and we're going to leave four tables in the middle the way we found it. And also on New Year's Eve, which is a week from tonight, Simple Actions will be meeting in this room as well. Please help us get the word out about that. Thank you very much.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy.
Amy.
January 22nd is the 10th anniversary of the Principals Group, and our David is the speaker for the celebration. So everyone, it's a Tuesday night, starts at 6:30, food, 7:30 speaker, January 22nd.
David, alcoholic.
David.
And I believe it's January 6th, AA 101 will be having their Sunday anniversary.
I just announced that.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You must have been busy thinking about yourself.
I feel really uncomfortable.
Is anything happening in AA 101?
That's a beautiful.
I'm in a realities.
Yeah. Simple actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands.
Strong.
Newcomers, is there anyone in the first 30 days of sobriety? It's not too embarrassing, but we would like to welcome you and get to know you. Keep coming back. Point out the literature is a bit. Please see me or any home group member after the meeting. Where's the literature? Is
out there on that table.
Out on the table.
Thank you. Alrighty. Sponsorship. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you to not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available at this table as we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church, doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Let's just thank our speakers one more time. Thank you for all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the steps.
No, not tonight, sorry.
And we have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs of page 164. Mm-hmm.
I am Johnny, I'm an
alcoholic. Hey, Johnny.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you can't transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet us. I'm sorry, you will surely meet some of us as you trudge to the happy road of destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Amen.
Let's close the meeting.
Oh. I mean,
one year running.
All righty. Would you like to take us out?
Sure. Our Father.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.